This is the ongoing story of a loving wife and mother of three, who seemingly vanished into thin air on New Year's Day. A wife who stood by her husband through good and bad, and a wife who would eventually become victim to the evil within that relationship. This is the story of Anna Walsh and the ongoing search for justice. This is Finding Anna.
Welcome to the podcast. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts to not miss any breaking updates and discussions on this case. Today, we are going to be talking with criminal defense attorney Ari Shamoulian about what is going on or what could be going on in the future regarding the defense of Brian Walsh. This is a very dramatic one, obviously. We have the laundry list of Google searches that were frantically done on January 1st, just hours after what a guest of theirs said was a peaceful, lovely evening, ringing in the new year, toasting, nothing seeming to be out of the ordinary. Then by 5 a.m., you have the husband searching how long before a body starts to smell, how to stop a body from decomposing, how to embalm a body, and then even in the same line of thinking, how long for someone to be missing to inherit. In a lot of ways here, this looks almost like a very rushed, oh my gosh, something just happened, and we don't know what happened, whether it was an accident or whether it was something that enraged him enough to kill his wife, but it does not seem extremely planned out. But to have on one's mind inheritance literally within the 2 or 3 hours of when she was murdered, what does that tell us about what we're dealing with here in this case?
This case has a lot of bad cosmetics. The circumstantial evidence pointing to Mr. Walsh committing this crime is definitely overwhelming. So we have these internet searches. We have blood being found in the house, mm-hmm. as well as on a knife, right? The district attorneys, I'm assuming the investigators, use something called luminol in the home to find blood spatter, and it's there. So it doesn't seem like this was a carefully planned out murder where he had a game plan. It seems that after the incident had occurred, the alleged incident, he freaked out. Right? That's what happens in most of these cases. People freak out. They go on the internet. And unfortunately, that was his downfall here. So there's a lot of circumstantial evidence showing that he's the one that did this.
Does he have a leg to stand on if this were to go to trial?
I would think so. And the big piece of evidence that's missing to date is the body. Mm-hmm. So the defense is going to argue, the state's not going to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she's actually been killed. There's no body. She, for all we know, she's still on her trip going somewhere for a job interview. She wants to get a divorce and doesn't want to come back. That's what juries like to see. They want to see the physical body. They want to see what happened. That way the jury can make an emotional connection to the victim. And when the body's not there, it's a little more difficult for the jury to connect and get a conviction. Also, there's no confessions. Mr. Walsh, to date, has not made a confession that, hey, I did this and this was my motive for doing it, right? The problem is, like, when he gets arrested and the police arrest him and they're bringing him out, he's making an awkward grin and almost smiling.
Yeah.
So I don't think a jury is going to like that. Someone, a reasonable person in his position that's just been arrested for murder or allegedly murdering someone, why would you come out that cocky, smiling and grinning? It's not normal behavior for sure.
It makes just the optics of it absolutely horrible. In your position as a defense attorney, have you ever had a client where there was that cockiness, that arrogance? And how do you rein someone like that in when you're doing your best to defend them?
Yeah, my job as an attorney is to advise my clients. I could never change them. Mm-hmm. They could either take my advice and, you know, prevent them from going into custody, or they could continue acting in a manner that's going to make bad cosmetics for a case. Mm-hmm. So when I get someone, for example, let's say it's a gang member and they like to dress a certain way or talk a certain way, that's got to immediately stop, right? We want to look credible. We want to look professional. And we want to come off looking like you're an all-star person. Whether or not they want to listen to me ultimately is up to them. But we definitely have those discussions. And that would be a conversation I would have with Mr. Walsh. Hey, You know, you were just arrested. We don't want you smiling for sure. Just keep your head down. We're going to walk out. I'm going to visit you in custody. So just relax and we'll do all the talking there. Don't come out there thinking like you're an MVP right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially with everything that they are finding. I mean, we all have knives in our homes. I don't think many of us have knives sitting idle that have blood all over them. And then the evidence, the trash bags of what was found and where he threw them away, the blood stains there, the evidence, the hacksaw, the hatchet, the towels, the rags, the gloves. And I hear what you're saying. There is no body, but at the very same point, the husband did searches on literally how to destroy a body. It wasn't just, you know, where to bury one. It's like, literally, how do I completely obliterate this woman so there's no trace of her on the face of this earth anymore? That has to be a hard one to argue against if you're trying to use the argument of you have no body.
Yeah. I don't think it's a slam dunk case for the defense. And then on top of those searches, you want to go to the fact that he goes to a store and purchases $400 or $450 of cleaning products.
Yeah.
You know, you better believe the state is going to go through all his credit card transactions and see, has he ever purchased $400 worth of cleaning products ever in his lifetime? And if I was a betting person, my answer would be no, right? He's not a janitor here buying stuff. Mm-hmm. This is going to be an isolated incident, and the state's going to use circumstantial factors, right? She goes missing, there's blood found there, and there's $450 worth of cleaning supplies purchased. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you connect the dots, and when you connect those dots, you're going to see that a murder has occurred here.
I would think it would be a very easy case to argue, or rather a very easy case to have someone found guilty in. With something like this, what, number one, are the next steps for Brian Walsh as this continues to move forward?
Trying to come up with various game plan strategies for defenses. We want to get experts involved. We want to get forensics involved. We want to see what potential reasons are there for the wife wanting to take off. What was the family relationship like? Are there any type of motions to suppress that could happen? Did the police act in a way that violated Mr. Walsh's constitutional rights? So in the background, there's going to be all these different types of investigations going on by the defense. And as a defense attorney, we got to start poking some holes in the case to lessen the overwhelming amount of evidence here against him. And that's what they're going to be doing right now.
Is basically the only hope in the world for Brian Walsh, if he were to get off on this, would it be some sort of technicality in your experience? I mean, almost like Bill Cosby being released from prison. Obviously, I'm not saying Bill Cosby is a murderer, but obviously a lot of evidence and hundreds of women show that he's a horrible human being, but somehow he was freed because of a technicality of what was said, what could be released or could be used in court or not used in court, and that somehow exonerated him. Is that the only hope that they may be looking for if you're in the defense of Brian Walsh right now?
I don't think so. I think outside of technicalities to the case, for the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that body is important to show that that person is actually dead. There are certain presumptions, right? If a person's missing over 36 hours, X amount of days, years, you could presume that the person's dead, right? Mm-hmm. But that body not being there for particular juries could be the make or break for the case. So outside of technicalities, there could be jury nullification where a particular juror on a panel might say, hey, I'm not comfortable putting this person away for life. I really need a body, or I really need to know that this person no longer is alive before I convict. So jury nullification is another big issue here.
Do you feel the argument that's going to be made in the defense is not that Brian didn't do this, but we don't think anybody did this because she could very well still be alive. She's from another country. She has family in other countries, and she was clearly unhappy. Maybe she did. Maybe she just went over there and disappeared, and they can point to ways that people can do that and just never be heard from again or found within the jurisdiction of the United States.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a point brought up by the defense. Do you mean to tell me that there's never been one girl who's fed up with her husband that's taken off for months at a time only to appear again? It definitely happens. So that factor right there is going to be used by the defense to prove that the state can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she's dead. There's other incidents of people leaving for months at a time and then all of a sudden appearing. And you as a jury shouldn't convict my client when we know of those particular incidents and they exist.
How do you make that evidence, or how do you make that argument rather, when there's mountains of blood and bloody stains everywhere, a bloody knife? How do you go down that road and try to make that argument with all of those other pieces of mounting evidence? Maybe no body, but it's pretty much everything but, including bodily fluids from the missing person.
Yeah. So number one, you're going to attack whose blood is it? Number two, you're going to attack, has there ever been any other incidents at this home, right? Has, you know, have there been any type of, you know, catastrophic cuts? I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. But that's your job as a defense attorney. You have to combat the overwhelming circumstantial evidence and come up with ulterior ways that, you know, she would have gone missing. And that's what the defense is doing right now. They're going to have their investigators comb through all that stuff to see how can we figure out where these bloodstains came from, were there other incidents, etc., to try to shut it down.
All right, Shamoulian, thank you for your insight into this case and the possible things that we're going to see as this continues to move forward ever so slowly in time. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the case as we have them here. You can even get a commercial-free experience through Apple Podcasts right now. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.